think this is a lecture you all need to hear before you make, well, before, even after you made your decision whether you want to come to Israel or not next year. All right? Because this is very important, not only regarding Israel or Aliyah or Shirut Lumi or Midrasha or whatever you choose to do next year. It's important to understand the Israeli society in this aspect. Now, why today? What day is it today? And don't tell me Thursday.
Sigd.
Oh. Almost. That was close. That was better than the boys in our high view. So that's good. What is Chag HaSigd? Who knows? Who knows what Chag HaSigd? Yeah, a lot of hands, I see. Yeah.
The Ethiopians.
Chag HaSigd is not Ethiopians.
The Ethiopians do, they go to the mountain and they pray.
50 days after Yom Kippur.
50 days, all right, let's take the serious part of what you said, all right? 50 days after Yom Kippur, that's right, they go up to a very high mountain. What else? Yes. What's your name?
I'm Hannah.
Hannah, yes.
They fast.
They fast, that's right. They fast half of the day. What else? What else do you know? Mountain, fasting, celebration, yes.
Don't they also read the Torah?
What's your name?
Yael,
yes.
Don't they also read the Torah?
They read the Torah, that's right. They read the Torah from, yeah, that's correct. What else? How do you know all that?
They presented it to us two classes
ago. We learned it like 2 minutes ago.
Beautiful. All right, that's good. All right, that's good. So how about we'll bring some new stuff, all right, in this lecture, because this is more Israeli focused. Guys, if you're coming, please come in, all right? A little bit of a foyer. All right, I want to tell you this wonderful story of the Ethiopian Jewry. The story is wonderful. The story is a story that you cannot compare to any other story of Kibbutz Galuyot, of the diaspora that came to this nation or the state of Israel, because it's very special. And I'll explain why. Priel, if you could just press our beer clicker, I'll be very good. Beta Israel. Have you heard this term?
Yes.
Beautiful. What's Beta Israel?
The name of the Jewish community of Ethiopia.
The name of the Jewish community of Ethiopia, thank you. They were disconnected 2,000 years ago. In what time?
Before the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash.
Yeah, in what? When?
Before the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash.
Of which Beit HaMikdash?
First.
Beautiful. All right, Melissa did a lot of them. Preparation for that. Exactly. But what's so important about, what's so special about this story? That they were disconnected 2,000 years ago and before the Beit HaMikdash, the second temple, was destroyed. Okay, that's nice. What's so special about that? Yes?
They didn't have like any of the oral tradition or the later Navis are still managed to keep Judaism.
For example, you're totally right. Their Judaism is entirely different than what we know today. For example, rabbi, the concept of a rabbi. They don't have it.
So what do they have?
Think of a Jews without a rabbi. Think of Jews without a shul, a synagogue. Think of Judaism without a synagogue and a rabbi. They don't have the concept of Mishnah, or Talmud, or Halacha, or all the stuff that were created after Beis HaMikdash HaRishon, after the First Temple. They don't have it. They maintain the same tradition, the same Judaism, just like all Jews practiced before the destruction of the First Temple. So now that's a good question. What do they do have? Right? If they don't have rabbis and they don't have shuls, what do they do have? Let's see. So what happened? Where did they come from? What happened? How did they come to Ethiopia? So 722 BCE, you don't need to remember that. Mamlechet Ashur, the kingdom of Assyria, occupied Samaria, which was the capital of the kingdom of Israel. Just as a small introduction, I bet you know the story. There was separation between the kingdom of Israel and the kingdom of? Thank you. That's right. 10 tribes were within Israel and 2 tribes were with Judea. Something happened. They were very, very bad in their halacha, in their spirituality, and they were occupied by Mamlechet Ashur, the Assyrians, and they were exiled to all around the place, and specifically the tribe of Dan, Shevet Dan, specifically him, he was exiled south from Israel, all the way to Egypt, to Mitzrayim, went all the way until what is today Saudi Arabia. All right, but some of them stayed here in the red one, where Patras and Kush is. Actually, Nogab is the Mavi. Oh, good. I can just well, that's right. Look what happened. What the prophet says, Yeshayahu. V'ayah b'yom ahu, in that day, Yosef Adonai shenit yado liknot et she'ar amo asher yishaer me'ashur u'mimitzrayim. My Lord Hashem will apply his hand again to redeeming the other part of his people from Assyria, from this kingdom that exiled everyone, and also from Egypt, Patros, Nubia, Elam, Shinar, Hamat, and the coastlands. What is Patros and Nubia? Do you know? Patros and Nubia are two countries that are now in the area that is southern from Egypt, which means Ethiopia, Sudan, all this kind of, on the coast of Africa, this is it. So this is one of the examples that we know. Back then, there were Jews in this part of earth that were disconnected before the first temple was destroyed. Keep that. Thank you. Okay. Where did they settle? So what we know today, specifically, after a lot of research and studies that were done on this specific population in Ethiopia, they settled somewhere here. A little bit before that, please. Thank you. Now, one back. They settled somewhere here. You see the green part here between?
It's touched.
Okay. Between Tigray and Amhara. All right? Somewhere here in Ethiopia. All the rest of Ethiopia, there were not so many Jews. For example, this is Addis Ababa. Addis Ababa is the capital of modern Ethiopia. All right? So they were the north Ethiopia. That was the entire density of Jews were settling there. Continue. Let's talk about Ethiopian Christianity. The Ethiopian Christianity is one of the most ancient Christianities out there. But it's not more ancient than the Jews in Ethiopia. Actually, they were very influenced from the Jews in Ethiopia. For example, those Jews in the Christians in Ethiopia, the Ethiopian church, has this kind of Shabbat observance, for example. Not like we observe Shabbat. But Shabbos is a special day in the Ethiopian Christianity. Another example, kashrus. They have their own laws regarding what is kasher and what is not. They're not calling it kasher. It's not regular kashrus like we know. But they have their own laws regarding food, what they can eat, what they cannot eat, how to cook it, how not to cook it. They were very much influenced from this group of Judaism. Another thing that is very important about them, we all know the story about King Shlomo, King Solomon, and Malkat Shva, right? The queen of Sheba. Who doesn't know the story? Everyone knows, right? So actually, the Torah, the Tanakh discusses, he says that there is this queen of Sheba, but that doesn't tell a lot. Who she was, what happened, she married Shlomo. The Tanakh doesn't say a lot. There is a book called the Kebra Nagst, The Glory of the Kings, in their language. This is an entire story. Belongs to the Christians, to the Ethiopian Christianity, but influenced from the Jewish Bible. It discusses King Shlomo and what is called to be the first queen of Ethiopia, which was Sheba. That was the kingdom before Ethiopia. And everything almost we know about who she was and things that we know today about King Shlomo, we learn from that scripture even more than we learn from our Tanakh. The Tanakh did not discuss a lot about Shlomo. So, even though it's Christianity, and even though we need to take that in a lot of doubt, it's still a good source for us to understand a little bit about the heritage of Ethiopian Jews and about ourselves as Jews. Continue. The Falashes, another thing we need to know. What are the Falashes? Or Falashmulim? Nora still talked about that? Not so much. Okay. In the 15th century, there was a king in Ethiopia called King Isaac. Again, I need to understand this. Is around like what? Like 2,000 years? 1,000 years after they were exiled and they got to Ethiopia. They did not know back then that there were any other Jews in the world. Think about that. They were disconnected remotely from anyone, living in their villages in Ethiopia, maintaining their practices, not knowing what happened to the entire world of Judaism back then in the 15th century. And yet, they had anti-Semitism. Yet the Ethiopian Jews suffered from anti-Semitism like any other place that has Jews in the world. They too. They had this king called King Isaac, and he decided to force all Jews to convert to Christianity. And if you did not want to convert to Christianity, you were called stranger, or in their language, falash. All right? Falash is a stranger. For 400 years, the Ethiopian Jews suffered from anti-Semitism, and they did not do anything. Anything. They just suffered. Some of them converted to Christianity. We'll talk about them later. But some of them continue to maintain their Jewish practices all the way until today. But 400 years after this happened, someone called Abba Mahali, you'll see it in a minute, he decided to do something. He decided to act. This is Abba Mahali. And he decided in the 19th century to protest against the Christians in Ethiopia and to walk by foot all the way from Ethiopia to Jerusalem. He took a huge group of believers that almost believed he was the Messiah. And he went all the way to Egypt. It was a very miserable journey. A lot of victims, this journey claimed. A lot of people died. He got all the way to the Red Sea and stopped there. He could not cross the Red Sea. That reminds us of what? Yom Suf. Exactly. But this time, there was no miracle to cross the sea. And this journey was really, really, really tragic. A lot of people who believed Abba Mahali is the Messiah and he will lead them back to Yerushalayim, they got disappointed and they understood he is not the Messiah anymore. And like every other story in Jewish history that people thought someone is a Messiah and eventually understood he's not, they lost their faith in Judaism and they converted into Christianity. So that thing was very ambitious. And back then, they wanted to go back to Jerusalem. They did not lose their belief and love towards Jerusalem. And they always hoped to get one day back to where they came from. Does it play? Let's see if you hear that way before you do play. This is a song in the Gez. You can call it a volume. This is a song about Jerusalem. It's in the language that they are. It's in the Gez language, which is the holy language of the Ethiopian, and it discusses about Jerusalem. You can hear it in the holy language, and you can hear it. You can read the translation. It's very ancient. It's like this melody and words are like 2,000 years old. They call Jerusalem Yerushalayim.
They had their own language.
Yes, they had their own language. Okay. I think that's the next slide. We'll see it in a minute. So, this picture is, where is it taken from? Yes, Yerushalayim, but what ceremony exactly?
Sig.
Exactly. This is from Chag HaSigd. We'll discuss what exactly are they doing. What are those umbrellas? They're very kind of clothes that they're wearing. And why are what are they doing out there? So now we know a little bit of the history of the Ethiopian Jews. What happened to them? Their relations with the Ethiopian church and their endless strive to get back to return to Jerusalem. But what exactly is their tradition? If they didn't have anything we have today, not a rabbi, not a shul, not halacha, no Mishnah or Talmud, what exactly did they have? First of all, we need to understand this distinction. There are Jews who we can call biblical Jews, biblical Judaism. What is the biblical Judaism? Biblical Judaism is Judaism that is based upon only the Bible. And not only the Bible, only the five books of Moses, only about Chamisha Chumshei Torah. And they don't have, not because they chose not to observe it and not to follow, though, like the Karaim, which is a different discussion, but they did not even know of the possibility of Judaism that is after, post the biblical time. Because they lived in the biblical period. So they had everything that was there since the first temple. They practiced the same traditions as in biblical time. On the other side, we have the rabbinical Judaism, which we belong to. And the rabbinical Judaism is totally different than the biblical one, even though we're the same descendants from the biblical Jews. The rabbinical Judaism is based more on rabbinical writings. Look at all the books that you have here in the Beis Midrash and Shul. Based on Halacha, on Mishnah, on Talmud. The everyday practices, what we do in our lives, most of them, maybe 90% of them, is not based on the five books of Moses, the Tamshichu Torah, but rather is based on rabbinical writings. Because this is the evolution the Judaism had to go through after the Second Temple. Continue. Here's an example of differences in traditions between the rest of the world, of the Jewish world, and the Ethiopian Jews. For example, tefillin, the men wear every morning in Shachrit. We know they are black. How do you know they're black?
Thank you.
This is called the Oral Torah. Torah Shebe'al-Peh. We believe that Moshe Rabbeinu received two Torahs on Mount Sinai. He received the Oral Torah and the Written Torah. Both of them, the Torah and the interpretation to the Torah. Haparshanut. But this was written much, much later, afterwards in the Mishnah and in the Talmud that discusses the color of the tefillin, and we know they need to be black. But the Ethiopian Jews, when we find them, that they are there, a little bit before the state of Israel was established, we found colorful tefillin. And they didn't know they were doing something bad, because it wasn't bad. They're not even aware of the fact that there is another tradition, a rabbinical one, that says the tefillin has to be black. Another example, Hebrew calendar. For us, the first month is Tishrei, Rosh Hashanah, is the first month. But according to the Torah, the first month is Nisan. And they actually celebrate and go through, their calendar starts with the month of Nisan. This is the first month in the year. For them, Tishrei is not the first month. Another example, mourning. What happens if someone died in the family? We know that for the 30 days after the funeral, the man cannot shave, cannot cut his head. All those stuff are much, much later than First Temple. They did not have that. All those halachot, all those minhagim, all the traditions are totally different. Another example, festivals. If a festival is not mentioned explicitly in the Torah, Ethiopian Jew will not celebrate it. For example, Hanukkah. Where is Hanukkah mentioned?
Sefer HaMakabim.
Thank you. Sefer HaMakabim, not in the Tanakh. One of the external books. Is that in the Tanakh? Where is Purim mentioned?
Esther.
Now you would ask. It's in the Tanakh, right? It's in the Bible. Why don't why wouldn't they celebrate?
After the Tanakh.
Exactly. That was a later addition to the Tanakh. Originally, the Tanakh was not included in the Tanakh. Tu Bishvat, Lag BaOmer. Think about any other holiday that you might think that is not in the five books of Moses or in the Tanakh. They would not celebrate. I'm going to jump all the way now to the end, but think of that. When they came first time to Israel, and they saw menorah, Hanukkah, in Hanukkah, they did not know where it is. We had to teach them everything from the beginning. What is Hanukkah? What is Purim? More than that, we had to teach them that the temple was destroyed. When they came to Israel, after the big operations, Miftah Shlomo, Miftah Moshe, we'll get that in a minute. When they came to Israel, there were Ethiopians that after, the first thing they did after they went out from the plane is to ask, we want to go to Beit HaMikdash, we want to go to the temple, where is it? And that was destroyed. So there's a lot of stories of a teacher or a flight attendant that she was the first one to tell them that, I'm sorry, but there's no Beit HaMikdash. She had to tell them, I know you believed and your forefathers believed that and your ancestors believed that, but I'm sorry to tell you, there's no Beit HaMikdash. Just think about how did they get that, this message? What did they feel after that? Yes?
What about Yom Kippur? Because they didn't have to get anything.
They had Yom Kippur, and Chag HaSeg is related to Yom Kippur. 50 days after Yom Kippur, they did have it. It was fasting, like we have it today.
But right, they didn't know that the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed until way later?
Yeah, but Yom Kippur is not related to Beit HaMikdash. This is Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av is related to Beit HaMikdash, and all other the fasting for that's a good example. I mean, all other fasting that we have that are not Yom Kippur, not mentioned in the Torah, they did not fast. Everything is related to Beit HaMikdash. Yes.
What about like davening? Because wasn't the Siddur also?
They did not have Siddur. They did not have davening. They had their own blessings. Pray. This kind of blessing. They had their own sacrifices. Something really, really like a mishmash of stuff. But they did not have a Siddur nor a shul. not services, not a chazan, not a rabbi, not everything that we know today. Yes.
But Shema is like mentioned in the Torah.
Shema is mentioned in the Torah, but not as a prayer. They knew what Shema is, but not as a prayer. No more questions? All right. Let's talk about the kiss. Another tradition that is very unique to the Ethiopian Judaism. Another tradition that is unique to the Ethiopian Judaism, to the Ethiopian Jewry, is the kiss. The kiss in their language is the leader. He's not a rabbi. He's like a rabbi. He doesn't have the concept of a rabbi. But his role was not to be posek halacha, not to say what the halacha is, because there was no concept of halacha, but rather he was a spiritual leader. If you had problems with your spirituality, you had questions, moral questions, or even social questions, you had disagreements within your family, between parents and their children, between neighbors, he was the leader to come and help. He was the one who tried to settle peace in the villages. He was the head of the village, both in terms of sociality and in terms of religion. And thanks to the kiss, in each village that has its own kiss, thanks to them, some say that this is the reason why the tradition maintained all the way, even though they did not have not Beis HaMikdash, they did not have no service, no prayer, no halakha, thanks to those role models in the community. There was, just as a footnote, there was a discussion in Israel when they came back to Israel, the Ethiopian Jews, how should we treat the kesed? Are there like regular rabbis? Can they like ordinate halacha? What is their status when they come to Israel? It's a discussion that is all the way up today. Someone asked about their language. Yes, the Ethiopian Jews had their own language, and they formed it, but it was common also to the Ethiopian Christianity. So this is the language, the holy language, that both the Jewish, the Ethiopian Jewry, and the Christian, the Ethiopian Christianity, they both used it. More than that, it was not only spoken in the holy language, it was even writings of the holy language. So their Sefer Torah are not written in Hebrew letters. The Sefer Torah, the scrolls themselves, are written in this language. It's called the Gez language. All right? It was not spoken daily. Let's see how you're good in that. Just go ahead. Let's see what is written here. Let's see you guys. Let's hear the first one here.
When they got exiled, they had a Torah, right?
The Torah was not written in Hebrew at the beginning. It was written in ancient Hebrew. It wasn't written in today. Ancient Hebrew is different. Who was the first one? Everyone, go ahead. Beautiful. Yeah, so that's your language. Someone asked about, if they brought with them Sefer Torah, they probably had Hebrew. So we need to understand that the ancient Sefer Torah were not written in Hebrew that we know today. The Gemara says that there is different language, different fonts of Hebrew, ancient Hebrew. One can call it Akkadit, that's the name of it. Other researchers say something else. But the Hebrew that we have today, it's much more dated afterwards, even after the Second Temple, that the Torah is written in what we know as the Hebrew letters that we have today. So when they went to Ethiopia, the Torah that they had was in a language that was much more similar to that than to what we have in modern Hebrew. Yes?
Did they not have the same like laws of kashrut?
No, they did not have the same laws of kashrut. No. So, not the same.
Is it still the same?
What? Is it what?
Is it still the same today? Like, are there still...
We'll see that in a minute. What about today? Yeah. Okay, the sig. What is today? So the sig, you said it's recorded. I don't want to say too much about that again. It's the festival 50 days after Yom Kippur, where usually when they were in Ethiopia, all the villages that are in close to each other, they were gathering together and go up to the highest mountain in the area. They would fast. They were fasting half of the day. And the other half of the day, they would read from the Torah. They would celebrate. There was a huge feast. A lot of music, a lot of dancing, something really, really, really big. We need to understand that this holiday is even more ancient than Hanukkah. This holiday is one of the most ancient holidays that is not mentioned in the Torah that is still being celebrated today, even more than Hanukkah. All right? But before that, they celebrate that for more than 2,000 years. Hanukkah is less than 2,000 years. All right, let's talk about modern times. What happens today in Israel? This picture is from the Israeli newspaper, Yediot Ahavonot. You see here, Al Kanfei Nesharim. This was in 1991. When they brought all the Ethiopians, not all, but that's who they brought and who they did not bring. But they bring back to Israel the Ethiopian Jews after a huge operation called Miftah Shlomo. And it was called Anka Fein Sharim. They just emptied these huge airplanes without any seats. They just gathered all of the Jews that they could find in Ethiopia inside of them, and they brought them back to Israel. We'll see in a minute how they did that. Ma? Amesh? All right, so let's continue, another one. Okay, Aliyah, a thing that is important for you to know. 1984, 1991, and 2000 until today. 1984, 8,000 people, the first operation to bring Ethiopian Jews to Israel. The Mifsah Moshe, it's called, the Moshe operation. It was good, but not so successful. In 1991, after they bribed the leader, the king of Ethiopia, they managed to bring 14,000 people. Give another one. We'll see in a minute. They brought 14,000 people from the Jews in Ethiopia after a joint operation of the IDF and the Mossad. 14,000 people in 45 hours. Think about it. 45 hours for over 14,000 people. Continue. There was a huge discussion in Israel whether bringing to Israel the Falashes. Remember I told you about the Falashes, those Ethiopian Jews who converted to Christianity. What about them? Are they totally Christians? Some of them converted to Christianity, but they were in the same families, brothers and sisters. Some of them were not so accepted into the Christian group, the Christian community. What about them? Should we bring them or not? So in 2005, the Israeli government said, yes, bring them and convert them to Judaism. So,
what's Shotrim?
Yeah. Shotrim are policemen. Policemen. So this is different pictures from Israel now about what exactly is the current situation of the Ethiopian Jewry in Israel. One second. You can see here different, we'll talk about each one of them now. Yeah. There are a lot of protests about how they got integrated into the state of Israel, into the community, in the army, with their tradition of Chag HaSikd, about everywhere. There was a question? Yeah. Yes?
Judaism, yes.
But they're not,
can't convert out of Judaism.
Yeah. But they had to convert back to Judaism because we don't know necessarily that they were born. Who we have today is born to a Jewish mother. We cannot know exactly what is their heritage, so you take out what is called Zera Israel, which is a concept inside of Giyur, of conversion, that you need to treat them as totally Christian, but with different little changes in conversion. All right? Give another click. Some data for us to understand how they were integrated into Israel. 47% of Ethiopian Jews are unemployed. This is for last year. 47% of them. They came 25 years ago. 32% just in the rest of the population of Israel. Next. An Ethiopian Israeli makes an average of 1,800 Israeli shekels less than his fellow Israeli. When you guys come to Israel next year, you need to understand that. There's a lot of way that needs to be done in order for them to get totally integrated into the society. Next. 46% of Ethiopian teenagers do not finish high school. Almost half of the Ethiopian teenagers don't finish high school. They never graduate. And therefore, they don't continue to college, university, don't get good jobs, high salary. You'll see that if you go to Shirut Lumi and you go to schools that are not in a very high social economic rating, and not as so good neighborhoods or cities, you'll find them there. You'll see that they're having really difficult time to integrate back to the society they came from. Even not the first generation, now we're talking about the third generation. Not the grandparents came to Israel, and the teenagers and the children have really difficult times. Continue. 89% of Ethiopians in Israel marry only in their community. That means an Ethiopian marries only an Ethiopian. Only 11% of them marry outside of it. Think of that. Because of racism? Because of what? Why? Why are those numbers? What are the reasons for that? Continue. 51.7% of the Ethiopian families in Israel are counted as poor under the line of poverty. 51.7%, more than half of them. there's a huge trouble about how they should integrate it back into the society of Israel, with all the hope that they had to come to Israel. But there are some good stuff. Give another one. 86% of Ethiopian Israelis serve in the IDF. Only 74% in the rest of the population. They serve more in the IDF than regular Israelis that were born in Israel. Next, another good thing, I think the most relevant. 72% of the Ethiopian teenagers said they feel Israeli. I think this is the most important data from this slideshow. Because even though all this problem that we had coming to Israel, eventually, they feel Israeli. And the fact they managed to feel Israeli and they love the country they live in, this is a big success. This is successful. This is not to be taken to granted. But again, we all, when we come to Israel and we meet them in work, in school, we need to let them, help them get into the society. All right? Even though you're not Israel, even though you come for a temporary time, they will look at you. They will talk to you. You will see how they live, their families, their homes. You'll need to help them get into the society, like they will feel like they're one among everyone and they're not special anymore. Continue. I want to finish with this video. This was taken 3 years ago in Gunda. Those are Falashim who converted back to Judaism. The Israeli minister of observant or whatever you call it opened what is called camps for Ethiopians in Gunda. Gunda, one of the cities in northern Ethiopia, where they taught them about Judaism and the state of Israel and a little bit of Hebrew and prayer for them to prepare them so when they come to Israel, it won't be out of the blue. They will understand a little bit of what's going on. So they sent this crew in TV, in news, they sent there to film this movie about them. I chose a small piece of it. I will translate when it goes quickly. This is their Kriya Satora. Look.
Asher, Bahar, Banu, Mikol, Hamim, Natan, Lanu, Er, Torato.
Vayomer Adonai el Avraham, Lech lecha, Me'artzecha u'me'aretecha, U'mbeit avicha, El ha'aretz asher areka, Ve'escha legoi gadol, Va'avarechecha, Va'agadla shemecha, Ve'heye berakha. ועברך מברכך ומקללך האור ונברכו בך כל משפחות האדמה.
He's showing those children for the first time how the kotel looks like.
What is
the
temple?
Look at their faces. He said, I said no, the kotel, the western wall in
mail.
Look at the faces. Any questions? Yes.
They're reading Torah in Hebrew.
Right, because they were taught Hebrew. They were bringing that after the camp that the Israeli government opened in Gundar. That was 3 years ago. They teach them Hebrew. They teach them the custom. They teach them how to read from the Torah. They deal with the synagogue. Everything that they need to know in order to come to Israel. Yes. So yes, not all Ethiopian Jews came to Israel. There are still groups in Ethiopia that are still there. Mostly the Falashes, people that are not considered Jews that did not want to convert back to Judaism. There are discussions what to do with them or to bring them back or not. Actually, during COVID, there was a huge aliyah of Falashes that went through conversion from Ethiopia to Israel. I think like 6,000, 7,000 of them that came to Israel because now we have the first Ethiopian minister in Israel. So she took it under her control and this is what she's doing. More questions? All right. Thank you so much. I hope that was interesting. And I think that this represents... Good luck to you next year, whatever you choose to do. Think of that.